You know what mystifies me, Daniel?
Tell me.
These people that complain about Christmas and the holiday season, I've never really fully understood it other than like this contrarian, you know, like why? It's a beautiful season. We can accept that, right?
Absolutely, but people do hate on it.
Do you think it's because people are, you know, going through a hard time and it happened to be a Christmas and so now there's this, like the PTSD of it or something? Or
I don't know what it is. I mean, the word I keep hearing get thrown around this season is consumerism. People are always fed up with all the consumerism.
Yeah, including Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah. He knew it.
He knew it. The thing that was always, I was always so impressed by with Charlie Brown was he would spend a half hour Christmas special moaning about consumerism. But then every commercial break, there's Charlie Brown hawking Dolly Madison's for you. You know, come enjoy these snack cakes.
Yeah, hypocritical son of a bitch. Charlie Brown.
Oh, I'm so tired of that kid. But it is the Christmas season. And by the way, I realize that there are listeners in our audience that are not Christmas celebrators per se, and more there's another holiday that they're celebrating at this time of year, and that's great. I've yet to meet someone that's offended by the idea of Christmas, but I've met a number of people that are offended by the idea of saying something other than Christmas.
Oh, absolutely. It does go that way more than the other. I don't think I know of anyone who's actually I've offended by talking about Christmas.
Yeah, it's pretty atypical. I don't know, but of course, you know, this is our Christmas special here at the Freshman 15, and if you're a Freshman 15 listener, then you already know the drill. What we like to do on these specials is we like to come up, each of us, Daniel and I, with a Christmas movie or a movie for that season to recommend.
Picking a Christmas film is really tough.
I had the hardest time with this.
I think there's so many different films about Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Either you don't want to talk about, or you don't want to see, or because they're so popular.
Well, there's so many like on the nose choices. It's right. Like, I'm like, what are you going to pick? A Christmas Story? Is there anyone left in the world who hasn't seen A Christmas Story?
I don't know. Probably.
But that's part of the culture, the fabric of Christmas is watching these movies that we all know, listen to these songs that we all know, eating these foods that we all know are going to be on the Christmas table every season. No matter what you do, there they are.
So I have a question for you then.
Yeah.
Do you have a Christmas food that you don't like at all? Like you know it's going to be there every year it is.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, I know it's going to be there.
Right.
I'm not going to touch that thing. Do you have a Christmas food you hate?
Well, okay, I mean, hate's strong.
Right, okay.
Hate's strong. But there was a different thing. So whenever we would go, this was the tradition, Christmas morning, we would open our presents and we would go over to Grandmother Bear's house. Mm-hmm. Grandpa Bear was over there too, but Grandmother ran the show.
She's the one.
I have no memory of this, but apparently Grandmother made this, you know, those like fluorescent marshmallow salads?
Yes.
You know those ones?
I do know.
Apparently she made it when I was like a toddler or mm-hmm. something. This is what they tell me. I don't know that this is true, but I hogged down on that.
You loved it.
I loved it so much that they decided to rename it her special recipe, Jeremy Salad.
So yeah. You have your own food.
I have my own food named after me. And we don't all stay 4 years old forever.
Right.
So I would get older, and sure enough, they would cart out this Jeremy Salad every year, and they would present it to me it was this incredible, like, well, now the king of the salad is going to partake of the salad. And after a while, I just didn't really like that salad anymore.
Oh, no.
But what can I do? It's my...
It's your salad.
It's my salad. So I would just... They would put these like enormous ladles of Jeremy salad mm-hmm. in front of me in lieu of all the great stuff like the turkey and all the, you know, right. the Christmas ham and all these beautiful things. But no, Jeremy salad. And I had to just choke it down every year. That was this fluorescent green salad that looks like a nightmare. That was my Christmas dish.
That's almost my dish that I don't like.
What's
but
your,
there's
yeah.
one, but there's one thing I like less. It's actually mashed potatoes. But
mashed potatoes?
No, listen. My mom's mashed potatoes.
Oh, no. Mijo.
Mijo.
What did she do to
okay,
you?
Okay, so here's how she makes her mashed potatoes. Lots of potatoes. You're mashing them up. Usually people put in butter or something. And she actually came up with this great idea
yeah.
To put a shitload of mayonnaise.
In the... Oh, Mom. Wow. Is this cultural?
This is... No, this isn't. To my knowledge, this is not a Hispanic thing.
She just had the idea.
She had the great idea. I don't know why, but...
Pad the mashed potatoes with...
So I didn't know this. For a long time, I was eating these mashed potatoes.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, these are fine. And then I was watching her make them, and I can't eat them anymore. It's hard to describe how much mayonnaise goes into this big bowl of potatoes to make them creamy.
Yeah. That's creamy. Okay.
Yeah, it's creamy. It's rough, Jeremy.
I don't even dislike mayonnaise, but no, I wouldn't eat that.
I mean, mashed potatoes with mayonnaise, that's not a thing.
Do you ever say, mi madre? What?
That's how you, my sentences typically start.
What?
Mi madre, ¿por qué?
¿Por qué? Have you ever had a confrontation with her about?
No, she's always so excited about it.
Yeah.
I mean.
You don't want to ruin it.
You don't.
Oh, man.
I think she made the argument that it makes it easier. I just don't know how the other alternatives are more difficult.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, was it a cost issue? Is mayonnaise cheaper than... I don't know. I've never heard of it. That's a new one on me.
Right.
Maybe and I'm a mashed potato guy.
I love them.
Whatever the case, I'm sure that all of our listeners have their own Christmas foods. And by the way, if you'd love to share what your Christmas disaster food is, we want to hear it.
We do.
Yeah, beat mayonnaise and the mashed potatoes, though. Good luck on that one. I think that may take the prize. So this is the Freshman 15 Christmas special. We like to pick a couple of Christmas movies. Not as easy as you would think. But there is something that I sort of know. Do you mind me going first?
Go for it.
Okay. There's something about the Christmas season, though. It seems to kind of lend itself to a certain flavor of entertainment that you don't really get any other time of the year. There's this sort of, I don't know. I mean, I hate to say like whimsy, but that's kind of what it is. You go to see a type of film that doesn't really make sense at any other point in the year. And
you
want
to feel a certain way, I think, when you go see a Christmas film.
Yeah, I think people are more willing to suspend disbelief during the Christmas season when it comes to their entertainments than the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. I could be making that up, but that's how it feels. And so when I was trying to think about, well, what's a Christmas film in that vein, I started thinking about, well, what are directors that give me kind of a Christmas feeling, even if they're not giving me Christmas films per se?
Okay.
And I thought of a couple. Without a doubt, Tim Burton is a Christmassy director.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, Alice in Wonderland, for example, has nothing to do with Christmas, but it has that sort of flavor and that kind of character and all that. And you look through all of his films and you can just easily... Now, of course, some of his films do take place at Christmas. But I was thinking like, okay, even that felt a little on the nose for some reason.
Okay.
You know? And I was thinking, is there any other director that gives me that feeling? And I thought, you know, I get that feeling from Terry Gilliam.
Ooh, okay.
I think the thing that Terry Gilliam and Tim Burton have in common, they are directors, but first they were animators. It's an interesting thing.
And I didn't know Terry Gilliam was an animator.
He was. In fact, if you look at all the old Monty Python, Flying Circus, all those little animated sequences, those were Terry Gilliam.
Wow.
Yeah. There's something about that. There's something about that sort of flavor of storytelling that if you start in animation, you kind of start with this kind of infinite visual palette. I think that sort of colors your approach and your aesthetic and all those kinds of things. And Terry Gilliam is definitely that. So anyway, I don't want to beat around the bush forever. My pick is his early film that takes place during the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's Brazil.
Great now, film. That's a good pick.
I know that I'm probably, I mean, let's be honest. If you listen to the Freshman 15 regularly, you've probably seen Brazil. I mean, you know, I don't want to assume too much.
Do you think I wonder.
Maybe not, but put it this way. If you have seen it, the best time to rewatch it, in my opinion, is during the Christmas season. Not just because the whole story takes place during Christmas, but also because there's just something about it. Yeah, it's dark and there is some cynicism and there's a lot of satire and those kinds of things. But I think your brain is kind of more open to the Brazil level of foolishness at this time of year.
Especially the colors. Oh, man, the colors in that film.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and for those who don't know, Brazil, of course, it's a film by director Terry Gilliam. It stars some really, really great actors. And the main character is played by Jonathan Pryce, And his love interest, I guess you would say, is Kim Greist. But it also has such great sort of supporting and side characters that are played by incredible actors. It's a supporting role. And you don't see him a lot on screen, but it's Robert De Niro.
Oh, yeah. He's so good in that film.
He's just fantastic. And he plays a very non-Robert De Niro role, which is a lot of fun. Ian Holm is in the film.
Wait, who did he play?
Ian Holm is Jonathan Pryce's supervisor at the beginning of the film.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, he just does a great comedic turn. You know, other Michael Palin, for obvious reasons, is in the film, and he's absolutely wonderful. The story concerns Jonathan Pryce's character, and this is all set in this kind of, it has a flavor of dystopia to it, but it's in this society where everything is ruled by this completely ridiculous bureaucracy that, yeah, I mean, it's equal parts funny and equal parts just deathly dark. I don't know how else to put it. And if you've never seen a Terry Gilliam film, then I don't know how to explain it to you. But if you have seen Terry Gilliam, really anything, if you've seen The Fisher King or 12 Monkeys or Another Christmas Movie, by the way, it's that sort of flavor. It's just kind of like, I don't know whether to be terrified or to be laughing hysterically because it's doing all these things to me at once.
Central services.
Oh, yes.
You rang, sir. Trouble with your air conditioning.
Air conditioning, sir.
No, it's all right. It's fixed.
Fixed?
Yes, I mean it, fixed itself.
Oh, it fixed itself?
Fixed itself.
Yes. These don't fix themselves.
Well, they don't fix themselves, sir.
He's tampered with it. Yeah.
I think he's tampered with it, Mr.
Well, sorry you've had a wasted journey.
I think we will have a little look at you.
No, you can't.
I think we should do, yes.
Have you got a 27B/6?
27B/6.
Sorry, I'm a bit of a stickler for paperwork, you see. I mean, where would we be if we didn't stick to the correct procedures?
We'll be back.
And of course, Jonathan Pryce's character, he's going through all the motions that he's supposed to with his job. And there's all these different ministries set up, the Ministry of Information Dispersal and Retrieval and all that. And it's essentially just this clogged up, interconnected series of pipes that kind of keep people busy for no good reason, really. It's such it's an on-the-nose, admittedly, satire of what then was just the bureaucracy of the modern world. But of course you can see the parallels even here in the 21st century.
Oh my word. I think it's so timely. And you talked about this with Terry Gilliam, is that you have both the whimsy and the dark side by side. It's not so much this, okay, I'm going to give you the whimsy, then I'm going to give you the dark. I don't know how he does it in his films, but you're right. It's all there at the same time. Even with the dark elements in the dystopian world, it's still not as dark as some of the dystopians you get in other films.
Yeah.
Or at least maybe it's not filmed that way, so it doesn't feel that way. There's a certain level of farce to it, or of, I don't really know a better word than what the word you're using, which is whimsy.
Yeah. What's interesting is it hits so many of the same notes as actually THX does. Mm. It's a very similar story to THX. But it doesn't take itself as seriously, but it simultaneously is much more serious.
Right.
And it makes you take it more seriously. And it actually does those things that THX was trying to do, but not really succeeding in. Like, you do have a feeling of like incredibly high stakes, even though this whole thing is clearly just a bonkers bananas visual ride. But admittedly, Brazil is a film lover's film. And if you get the chance, Brazil at Christmas time, I don't know. I can't recommend it enough. Strap in.
All right. So my pick for the Christmas special, Jeremy, you somehow seem to, in your introduction, dismiss my pick.
Uh-oh.
By saying Tim Burton was on the nose.
Oh, no.
But, you know, that's all right. I'm going for it. I'm going to own it. And you're right. And I actually asked my wife before we were doing this episode, I said, okay, we're going to have a Christmas special. What film do you think I'm going to pick? And she guessed it. And it's 1990s Edward Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands. I love it.
That film is so important to me for so many reasons, and not just because it has to do or takes place during Christmas. And if we think about the Christmas story, it almost seems like the anti-Christmas story, and which I love. You have this figure who is created, who kind of comes into this world and makes people's worlds better and is rejected. So that's kind of similar if we think about the Christmas story with regard to Jesus. But what I think is interesting is at the end of it, he's rejected, but he actually, it's like the reverse Advent. He kind of goes back to the castle and he remains actually who he is. And in this world that he maybe touched could still be better and might remain better, but he himself is still all alone. And I just think, I don't know, there's so much I love about the film and I love about this character, Edward. I'm just assuming if you listen to this podcast, you've seen it. But Edward is this guy who's created by Vincent Price, his character, and who was an inventor and made a lot of things, and he wanted to make this man, but he died before he's able to complete him, and so he had scissors for hands. And this woman, Peggy, goes up to meet him. She's selling like Avon products. She meets him, brings him back to the neighborhood. Everyone's kind of in awe of who this person is, confused, maybe a little freaked out. But he's able to do things for them. I don't know. It removes some of whatever this facade they had lived into. So their lives do, it seems like, get better. Through the course of the story, he ends up having an enemy and is then forced back up to the castle out of this perfect suburban world. Hey!
Now you've done it.
Scratched him, really. It's okay.
Stay back.
No,
okay, big... touch again and I'll kill you.
No, it's no big deal. It's just...
Call a doctor. He's skewered, Kim.
No, wait.
Stay away from her, okay? I mean it. You can't touch anything without destroying it. Who the hell do you think you are? You've been hanging around here anyway, huh? Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out. Go. Freak.
Hey, Edward, where are you going?
And I think I like it because here's this character who's misunderstood and by being embraced makes the community better. He speaks to me because that's often how I feel around the holidays.
Yeah.
You go into this world that should be familiar, but it's not to you, right?
Right. Your
family, where you grow up. There's a certain level of maybe confusion, frustration, loneliness that you feel. Here are the people who should know me the most. They don't, you know. And then in those moments, like, am I going to be able to make this situation better?
Right.
Can I bring some life to whatever dysfunction I may have or just whatever frustrating conversation we're having? Am I just going to retreat and kind of leave and go and be by myself? So Edward, there's a really personal element to that film for me, especially around Christmas. I always think of his character when I'm thinking about going back home because I just can't help but feel like Edward, but then in some ways not want to end up like maybe Edward ends up. So that's my pick.
Yeah, no, it's a solid pick. It really is. I think when people think about Christmas and Tim Burton, your mind immediately goes to like The Nightmare Before Christmas,
right,
and those kinds of things, which I don't even think he technically directed. He just had a lot to do with, right?
Really? I actually don't know.
It was a Henry Selick directed film,
yes,
right? Wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
But Tim Burton's name and paw prints were all over it, so it's thought of as a Tim Burton film. But whatever the case, though, I don't know if you saw Edward Scissorhands when it came out in the theater.
I did.
You did? Wow. Yeah. So you had to be a...
I was eight.
Yeah.
I don't know. My mom took me. It's crazy. Like,
yeah.
I remember seeing it, and I remember her feeling kind of bad that I was like at some of the things I was watching.
Oh, really?
But I was amazed by it.
You know what? I recall seeing that film in the theater, and I loved movies, but you know, I was, I don't know, whatever I was. I couldn't have been more than 13, 14 when that came out. 14, I guess. I remember thinking, this is doing something aesthetically that I didn't know how else to describe it. Like it was doing something. I remember the cookie cutter homes going down the block. And I remember thinking, is that the setup for a joke or something like that? And it never really was a joke per se. It was just a Tim Burton aesthetic choice that, you know, and we've talked about this in previous episodes where I love these things that can only be of a certain director,
right,
you know, and that film, I mean, you know, Tim Burton from his first film was a fairly fully realized director. But I remember when that came out, there was something about Edward Scissorhands where, I mean, even Beetlejuice, you could kind of classify as a comedy or something. But this was something that was so hard to classify.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? But it was just incredibly affecting, though. I didn't know how else to put it. I remember the guy from 21 Jump Street was in it, and
yeah, what? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I think he's made other movies since then, but
not C. Michael No, I don't remember his name. Anyway, but yeah, I think that I love Edward Scissorhands. There are so many things about the film that I just was like, wow, you can do that.
Yeah.
That, and even at 8, I'm thinking, I don't know why I'm watching all the cars come out at the exact same time, all the cars coming back in at the exact same time. I didn't know what it was saying at that point. But having rewatched it multiple times since, you're like, wow, there's so much going into that film.
And it was such a subtle way to kind of pre-criticize the critics in a way, you know? Yeah, the easy thing to do would be like, what in the hell is that? What, he's got scissors for hands and he decorates shrubs or what? Right. You know, what? It's too much with the weirdness. But the flavor of the movie and the aesthetic choices of the movie and even the themes of the movie are a criticism of that kind of dismissal.
Yep.
It's like, no, you have to allow for art. You have to allow for beauty and strangeness. And you're not alone in that. Seeing that film made me think that, you know, it's kind of okay maybe to be this guy that I am, that I'm sometimes embarrassed of, but it's not embarrassing. It's great.
Yeah, it's great. And you're important for the worlds that you kind of go into.
Well, these are great films. These are films that, I think you should. If you're a film lover, chances are you've seen both of them. If you're a film lover and you haven't seen one of them or either of them,
do it.
Hi, you hints. These are great films. Terry Gilliam's Brazil and Tim Burton's Edward Scissorhands. I mean, you know, I don't think you can get more required viewing than these movies.
If you've already seen them, they're worth a revisit, especially in this season.
Yeah. And you know what? I think go ahead, watch It's a Wonderful Life. Watch The Christmas Story. Watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special, The Grinch. Do all your usuals. It's great. It's fun. If you've got kids, then holy cow, go for it. But don't forget to take a look on the other side of things, on maybe the darker side of Christmas or the more creative or iffy or weird side. And check out Edward Scissorhands. Check out Brazil. I think you'll be happy you did.
If you have a favorite Christmas film you want to let us know about, write us.
Please do. I think that's it for the Christmas special, the holiday special, whatever you like to call it, of the Freshman 15. We want to wish you and yours a happy holiday. Thanks for joining us.
Happy holidays. Make my wish come.